This is Attract, Engage, Grow, a Three Aspens Media podcast that provides a fresh look at how companies are using content marketing to stand out in today's ultra-competitive digital world. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 3, Engaging Prospects Who Aren't Ready to Buy, featuring Nina Baker with Tribute Software. I'm Lindsay Konzak, your host, and I'm looking forward to sharing ideas and inspiration from companies who are using content marketing to attract, engage, and convert prospects into customers. In this episode, I'm talking with Nina Baker, Marketing Manager at Tribute Software, an independent ERP platform that serves distribution companies in fluid power, fluid handling, hose, sealing, automation, motion control, and related industries. In other words, they serve a very niche market. I've known Nina for years, starting back when I was editor over at MDM.com. I wanted to talk with her because I think she does a great job of engaging prospects, even when they're not in a position to buy or switch suppliers. That's critical in software, which companies buy infrequently. I learned a lot from my conversation with Nina, and I hope you do too. Nina, thanks so much for joining me today.
You're welcome.
So I want to start somewhere outside of marketing. So I noticed that you have a biology degree and kind of started your career out in the science world as a chemist. Is that right? Can you tell me a little bit about kind of your background and how you evolved into the role you're in today?
Sure. I started out wanting to go into wildlife biology, and I went to college that had a very rigorous pre-med biology program, and so I graduated with a degree in biology with a concentration in sociobiology and wildlife management.
And oh, interesting.
When I graduated, it was in the early 80s, in the last recession prior to the one in 2008, and so there weren't a whole lot of jobs in government positions, and I had student loans, so I basically took a job that was going to pay me a decent amount of money, and that was working at a lab that tested rubber products here in Akron, Ohio, and worked as a chemist, an assistant chemist, and after a few years, that got really boring for me. I just was doing the same tests over and over again, and I didn't really enjoy it, so I ended up looking for a job that I could use my writing skills and something that would be a little more mom-friendly because I was going to start my family at that point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I ended up working at a electronic component distributorship for a few years, and I worked in the sales and marketing department there. And so I got to know the industry inside and out. And after my kids were partially grown and I could go back to work, I ended up getting hired here at Tribute in the sales and marketing department. And we had a full-time marketing consultant at the time. And then we went through the next recession. And they let the marketing consultant go, and I took those jobs on, and I found out that I really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And so you've been with Tribute how long now?
About 15 years.
About 15 years. That's great. So I kind of feel like Tribute's kind of one of the few software companies in our market anyway that kind of still truly targets a niche, and really knows the market it serves. Can you tell us a little bit about Tribute and what makes it different?
Sure. We're, as you say, a niche-oriented company, and we serve a very specific marketplace. We design and support software, business management software for industrial distributors, and mostly in the fluid power, automation, motion control, and rubber product industry. So as a result of that, we really know our customer base. We really know what they need. We have a really good reputation in the industry. And we get to know our customers personally. So a lot of our competitors are big, huge companies that have thousands and thousands of clients, and obviously they're not going to know those people at the level that we do. We're still privately owned. Most of our competitors have been acquired, and their software packages are now legacy software packages that are slowly being done away with. And we still do our software support here in the Midwest. We're based in Ohio, and we still do stuff the old-fashioned way. We answer the phone. I think that those are our strengths, that we know our customers, we know exactly what they need, we rely on them to tell us what's happening in their industry so we can keep on top of it and program our software accordingly.
So I guess to that end, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today is I feel like you've really done a great job kind of in your role of being truly in the industry and not just speaking to it, if that makes sense. So some examples with our audience. So a lot of the communications that I see, I follow you on Facebook, of course, and a few other channels. And you're sharing notifications not just about your latest software features, but you're talking about, here's some upcoming trade show information you need to know about, and here's the deadline, and these are just, industry events. You're sharing customer news. You're sharing manufacturer news that would matter maybe to or affect your customers in some way, maybe consolidation or a new product line. And I guess these are all great examples of content, which, is what I like to focus on, that is not specific to your software platform. So I was looking back at your blog way back when you started it, and one of your introductory sentences was, hey, we just want to provide information and news that's relevant to, our customers. And to me, that says you're kind of acting like a publisher and not just a brand. And that was like way back in 2009, which doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but it kind of was. And before kind of what I would call the true rise of, what you and I are doing, which is content marketing. So that kind of lays the groundwork for our listeners. So I guess tell me why it's important to you to connect with your audience in this way.
Okay. Initially, one of the reasons why I started it was because, as I said, I took over a lot of the duties when we went through the prior recession. So obviously cost was a big concern, and I saw blogging and social media as something that I could do that had very little capital outlay, and so blogging seemed like a natural fit. I, at that time, was already blogging. I am, it's kind of a weird roundabout way that I got into it, but I am a military brat. I went to high school overseas, and the base where my high school was that I graduated from doesn't even exist anymore. So I was organizing our high school reunion and trying to get a hold of people who had been flung to the four corners of the world is a difficult task after all the years that had gone by. So I saw blogging as a way of putting content out there, enabling people to find me and find our reunion committee. And I posted articles about people, catching them up on students and alumni and teachers, and articles about the base. And it really did work to find people that were not in touch with each other anymore. So when I thought about how I could market our company using blogging, one of the things that I thought about was, how can I lure people into reading our blog? And I had already joined groups that talk about ERP software and whatever else, and the one thing I noticed was that people who wrote a lot about ERP software and they'd make comments, all their competitors would jump on and talk about stuff, but I hardly saw people, the users or prospective buyers there. And so I tried to come around from what my customer's perspective would be. What are they going to be looking for as far as information out on the web? Well, one of the reasons is they don't make a purchase of our type of software very often. So if I'm going to be talking mm-hmm. about my software all the time, they're not going to look at my site very often because they don't make that type of decision every day. It's not something that they're looking for information on maybe once every 8 to 10 years. So I thought about let me blog about stuff that's important to them. And it also helps our customer base because if they grow, then we as a company grow and become successful. If I blog about industry things, it demonstrates that we are involved in the industry and we have some expertise in the industry. If I'm blogging about subjects that our customers or prospects are drawn to, then they find out about our company because I always put a call to action in at the end of the article. And so that draws people to us or makes our company name in their mind as someone who is in the industry and understands the industry. You know, if I put out a article about an app that Bosch Rexroth has put out, a new mobile app, then those people who distribute that line might come and look at the article and then go, oh, I didn't realize this software company had a relationship with Bosch Rexroth or Parker Hannifin or Gates Corporation or Eaton Corporation. So those types of things, it's my way of doing it the roundabout way.
I love that. I love that philosophy. So I guess to me, consistency is everything, right, when you're taking this approach. I mean, you've been blogging regularly since 2009. Do you have any tips or lessons learned for other companies, you know, whether they be distributors, suppliers, you know, other, of course, non-competing software providers, about how they can start a blog and stick with it?
Sure, yeah. I guess what I would concentrate on is to find someone within your company that is committed to doing it, because it does take a lot of time, and who has some writing chops, and will post on a regular basis. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. going to do you any good if you start it up and then have it wither on the vine after a few months. Mm-hmm. I post twice a week, every Monday and Thursday, and some people post more, some people post less, but it's important to just get started and to do it on a regular basis. If they don't have someone like that at their company, and a lot of our customers don't, they're running pretty lean and, you know, they already wear several hats as it is, then I think it's important to hire somebody to do it, and someone that is going to understand your business and, you know, what you want to accomplish with that blog. You know, as you say, content is king now, and it's true now more than ever. So I think it's really important that you get your name out there on a regular basis, because websites are fairly static. They don't change that often. It's hard to change them. And a blog is a way for you to constantly putting material out there on the internet and increase the chances of somebody finding you. And everyone starts their search online anymore. I mean, we still send snail mail, that's for sure. I still send out letters regularly to our customers because we still have a lot of people who, you know, that's a good way to get in front of them. But, you know, the industry is changing. The demographics of people in the companies that are looking at our product is changing. So you have to, constantly update your tools and techniques of reaching that audience. One of my tips for them would be just, you know, research your industry and the people that you're trying to attract to your website. Find out what they're interested in. What are their demographics? What do they want to know about your company? And then, you know, put out information that they would find useful so that they would, you know, share that link on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever.
It's a great tip, and I think sometimes people maybe overthink it maybe a little bit, you know, thinking it has to be a perfectly formulated blog with you know, that has to be like 1,000 words long, but really a couple paragraphs, you know, saying, hey, look who just bought who, or look at this new product that's out, or hey, I saw this interesting article that might, you know, be relevant, and just summarizing it and shooting an you know, link is sometimes good enough.
Right, exactly.
So how do you, a lot of times the resistance or the questions that I get anyways is how to measure the ROI. Like, how do you know, clearly, you know, you're getting people to your website, and you've seen some success, and it definitely supports your brand. So what's your response if somebody says, you know, does a blog matter? I mean, will it have an impact on your sales? Can you measure the ROI?
I would say it is difficult to measure the ROI. We have had a couple sales where people have told us, because I always ask, how did you find us?
Oh,
And
good.
I've had a couple that have said, oh, I found you through your blog. You posted an
Oh.
article about such and such a product that I use, and through that I found you. Another way that I measure ROI is because I do repurpose those blog articles. I put them in newsletters. I put them on LinkedIn. I put them on Facebook. So when I see those clicks, then I can tell whether they're working or not and people are interested. Especially when I send them out through our email service, because I'll send out a prospect newsletter once a month and I put those articles in there, and I'll put and then I can monitor that and see exactly how many clicks I get on those and who is clicking on that. And then if someone's looking at a particular item of interest, I can send them a letter or packet of information, because I have that information in my email database of exactly who's looking at that article.
Amazing. Yeah. So speaking of the email, again, I get your emails, and it's not a, you know, blatant sales pitch. You know, everybody always thinks every email has to be selling something. What's your philosophy behind email, and how well is it working for you?
My philosophy is I want to remind our prospects that we're out there, keep us top of mind, and I don't want to insult them or be obnoxious and flood their mailbox with information about our company. You know, I get stuff like that, and the first thing I do is block that person, because I'm busy. I don't want to read a bunch of stuff that isn't pertinent to me. And the more pushy you are, the more irritated I get. So I try to respect our customer base and our prospect list, and just send out information once a month. And it's just a compendium of the blog articles that I've published in the last month, plus any other information that I might think is useful to them. I try to put in a customer spotlight of ours, usually once a month. And those are always a really popular. They get a lot of hits. And I think it's because they all want to see what their competitors are doing in the business.
Sure.
And it also shows, hey, you know, these people use our software and they're successful. They're running a really successful business. So it reflects back on us as a company.
And I guess I could speak directly to your willingness to share guest posts, because you shared one of my blog posts on Amazon, you know, the topic on everybody's mind. So
Right.
thank you for that. So how, just briefly, like, how do you, like, why do you share guest posts, and I guess how do you identify what you're going to use? Because I think it's a great strategy.
Well, one of the reasons is because I'm not one that can be an expert on everything. So I like to have guest posters come in. They spice things up. They bring in a fresh perspective. Obviously, you have had a background in industrial distribution for a long time, so you could speak to the subject of Amazon and the competition that a lot of distributors feel that they have from Amazon and what they can do to combat that. You know, that's not something I can speak to. So I know a lot of people in the industry after 15 years. I like to have them come in and do guest posts, and then it brings in readers that I normally wouldn't have because of their following. So it's a good way to also make people aware of your blog that may have not seen it before.
Love it. I think it's great. What are your top challenges? This is a super general question, but what are your top challenges as a sales and marketing manager in today's multi-platform world?
Well, as you know, technology is always changing. So I think that just trying to keep up with that is a challenge. I think a challenge for a lot of people who want to get into social media and do marketing is that sometimes just all the tools out there can be overwhelming. And I think they need to focus on what can really help them get their company out in front of others. So, you know, are you trying to reach engineers? Well, you're going to have to look at a certain set of tools that can reach engineers versus your top decision makers at a company who are probably baby boomer generation. That's a whole different set of tools that you need to use. I think people think that, oh, okay, I have to be on every social media platform out there to accomplish what I want to do. Well, no, that's not going to work. Our company doesn't have accounts with Pinterest or Instagram or Snapchat because basically I don't have that many hours in the day, and the audience that I want to reach aren't there in a professional level, so there's no point. I found that LinkedIn works really well for the people that I'm trying to reach at my company. So that's a challenge. Facebook use is increasing, but I don't use it right now as a huge source of leads, but it's also a way for our company to show a personal side of our company, our staff. So since we are smaller, we like our customers to get to know us, and that's one of the things we push in our marketing efforts is if you buy software from us, you'll get to know us. So that's what we use Facebook for, talking about our community service projects, that sort of thing. And I think people don't use the industry publications enough. Whenever we have a major event in our company, I will send a press release to industry publications for them to include. And then I'll sometimes use a press release service to send out a press release. And you can use those for a nominal fee. But, yeah, people have to think about, you know, who's making the decisions at the company that are going to be buying your products and services. You know, a lot of the baby boomers are passing their businesses down to the next generation, and the Gen Xers and the millennials are making the buying decisions now, and you have to gear your marketing efforts to them. So we're updating our website this year, and we're looking to incorporate video and
that's exciting.
Marketing efforts and testimonials from customers, because our number one source of leads is customer referrals. So we're keeping that in mind as we gear our marketing efforts in ever-changing directions.
That's exciting. That's a big project, but it's exciting.
Yeah, it is a big project.
Websites are. So, Nina, I guess generally speaking, where do you draw inspiration from?
I think if companies are looking for someone to head up their marketing efforts, I think that curiosity is important. That whoever takes up that job has to have, you know, be reading all the time and being up in their industry. I mean, I look at my Twitter feed all the time because that's where I get a lot of inspiration from. I look at LinkedIn. A lot of people are publishing on LinkedIn now. Facebook, as I said, industry publications. So I keep a fresh source of material coming in that way, and I'll just put stuff all in a file and to look at later or to be a few articles ahead. I also follow people in the marketing industry because, you know, it's easy to get stagnant and to follow people who are in the marketing field. You get fresh ideas all the time. I mean, like, I like the blogs that you put out. I read stuff from Guy Kawasaki, Rebecca Radice, Joe Polizzi, who is the founder of Content Marketing Institute.
Mm-hmm.
So those types of sources will really help you think about your marketing efforts and think about, you know, where you're going to focus and all that stuff. And also build relationships. I mean, you and I have known each other professionally for many, many years when you were at MDM and have continued that relationship on since. I think that's important, and certainly never to burn any bridges, because you'll see that again later on down the line.
Well, especially in a smaller industry, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, not that I'm looking to burn any bridges, no matter the size of industry, but yeah, you're right. Networking and keeping your mind open to new ideas is all really important. I guess, is there anything else that we didn't cover, Nina, that you want to kind of add to the conversation?
Yeah, sure. I do want to say part of my marketing efforts also include marketing in-house versus prospects.
Cool.
And what we do is send out a biweekly newsletter to our customers, and it talks about what we're doing as a company, things that are coming up. We have an annual users group meeting that's coming up in June, so of course we talk a lot about that. I always include software tips and tricks, so, you know, people might open it just for that. We talk about our training classes. We talk about third-party software products and vendors. I always put in links to the latest blog articles, so they're repurposed yet again. Our most popular segment in that newsletter is I always do something about customer news. And as I said, you know, it's a smaller company, and a lot of our customers know each other because of our annual users group meeting. So they like seeing what someone else is doing, what's going on with them. I talk about, you know, if one of our customers has acquired another company, who has earned awards, who's doing a cool community service project, who's celebrating a significant business anniversary. Which of their staff members serve on industry boards, stuff like that. And I feel that cultivates a family-type feeling within our customer base. And also, once they get to know each other, if they need a product that they don't have, they are willing to call one of, you know, our other customers to ask if they can get it from them, do business with each other, because there's family-type feeling that's generated by that. So I guess to wrap it all up, I would, you know, I give companies advice looking to start a marketing program is to pick people who are proficient writers, who are curious and diligent and consistent, who are respectful of others and make connections easily. And, you know, all this emphasis on data analytics and Google searches and that sort of thing is important, but I think it's really important to have someone in place who understands your business and your audience and picks the right tools to use to draw them in, and then does that on a regular basis.
I love that. And I'm so glad you brought up the marketing to your existing customers aspect of it, because I think that's something that often gets kind of overlooked. So thanks for bringing up that point. But I guess that wraps it up for the day. Thank you again, Nina, for joining us and for your insights from your experience in sales and marketing. I think it was really valuable, so thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Nina. If you want to view the blog that Nina talks about in this podcast, please visit blog.tribu.com. That concludes this episode of Attract, Engage, Grow. If you have a story you'd like to share, please reach out to me at 3aspensmedia.com or email Lindsay at 3aspensmedia.com. That's the numeral 3, not spelled out. Thank you for joining me. We'll see you next time.